Today, we set up Jerusalem and everything up to that point. And this is what you're looking at is Jerusalem. You know, I've been looking for a good picture of Jerusalem that doesn't have mosques in it. I found it. It's the Ascension Mountain. So it's really a good mountain for Christians because this is where the Lord said, he left from. We're going to assume this is the place because it's a high mountain and it's on the Mount of Olives. It's on the ridge. And they built a tower there, so that makes for sure that's the place. And he said he's going to come back to the Mount of Olives with his feet, right? So I figured, well, what more appropriate place to take a picture of that represents Jerusalem than the Mount of Olives, the Mount of the Ascension. This is actually from the eastern side looking west rather than from the western side looking east. That's why, and the picture is not very good. And this thing in the middle here is, you know, something I didn't get a chance to take out, but it's a handle to turn the picture. I did a screen clip and didn't take it out. So that's what that is, nothing else. This is an electric pole over here that shouldn't be there, but but I like the, you know, the Tony got the different colors as they go back. It'd nice, be nice to be a little sharper, but then it loses its artistic feel too. So this will be my picture for the time being of Jerusalem with the Mount of the Ascension Tower there. There are three other towers. Oh, by the way, I'll tell you this now, you'll forget it. At the end, I have a video clip. I don't want to talk about it. I just want to go into it. But in the video clip, it talks about going into Jerusalem. In fact, it's this route here we show. And there are three towers on the hill, but you usually can't see them all. But the one you will see most of the time, and you'll see it on the horizon as we come over the hill, is this tower. And so I want you to watch for it. I'll tell you about that clip, too, in the sense that it's a modern-day video of traffic into Jerusalem. And at first, it struck me a little offensive, like, well, why do we have to have this traffic here? Because it's kind of messing up with what I want to do, showing the people. But then I thought, well, in the millennium, the traffic will flow towards Jerusalem. Will they be driving these old broken-down trucks? I don't know. But there will be commerce flowing into Jerusalem on these wonderful roads, and you'll be on one. All right, so just imagine that. And then the other thing is, I didn't plan this, but there's a song called Jerusalem. It'll be sung by John Starnes. And as the last verse says, the gates will open wide and all may enter in. And at that very time, we just moved through the last checkpoint. So anyway, watch for that. It wasn't planned. It was just sort of, well, God did, I guess, but I don't want to take that much credit for it. But anyway, those things I wanted to watch for you, the commerce, the gates, and the video, always watch for the tower. You'll see it right at first on the left, and then you'll see it most of the time on the right. As we come up the bank, you'll see it on your left, and it doesn't show that very well. So just keep your eye on it, because that's going to be the place of the return of the Lord. But before we go to Jerusalem, now that I get you started on that, we got to finish up some business from last week. I made some mistakes, so we got to do some erratas. The Dead Sea Scrolls were found in 1947 and later by Bedouins. Their value authenticity was unknown to anybody and everybody. This is a new discovery. So the scrolls were offered for sale, but the value was not recognized. And notice this ad, an offering, 4 scrolls for sale in the Wall Street Journal. I said the New York Times. That's what I meant wrong. That's what is wrong. So anyway, then I said, well, I'll show you the ad. The scrolls were never in a wastebasket, which I said they were, because I got that mixed up with the Mount Sinai scraps of New Testament writings in Mount Sinai, where there was a basket that they threw for, used for his kindling paper, wood paper. So got to get that straightened out. So these pieces of the scrolls were not ever discarded. They didn't know what they were. They laid around until somebody sort of figured out what they were. And you see here they're being sold in 1954. That is 7 years after they were originally found. They still don't really understand what they were, although it says their biblical manuscripts dating from at least 200 BC are for sale. This would be an ideal gift for an educational or religious institution by any individual or group. So they understand some of the value of it, but they're not at the value at which they end up being. And that was in 1954. So my conscience is clear. Clearer. Now, this is not an errata. This is an interesting stroke of whatever. I got home last week. I talked about the caves that have been found since, and I said there were hundreds of them, and that many not explored or thoroughly explored. And at home, my wife sits, her favorite thing is look at Facebook, and she's a friend of Randall Price, I guess with my permission. And she said, you notice here that Randall Price has just discovered another cave. That was last Wednesday night. And I thought, well, big deal. Here it was again. But it's been 60 years. Something like 60 years since the last cave has been discovered. So it was a big deal. So on the Randall Price's Facebook page was an announcement of another cave that has been found, and it's been in the papers. So an update. On the left, you see, by the way, that's number 12 he found, number 12. And I say he and Liberty University and the Hebrew University do things together. So I guess I'll know next year at pre-trib conference, I'm sure he'll talk about it, says, who is it actually that saw it first? But he is getting some credit for this. We taught number one is up here. That's where we were last week where I saw it. We had Twyla looking in. That's number one. I don't know where 12 is. It's not located on this map. This is Randall Price. We know where the cave is in terms of a picture of it. And we got to show him in the cave looking for stuff. And we see pottery that's broken. And there's pottery shards here and so forth. All right. Now, remember, maybe you don't know this, there's nothing in the jar. The jar is empty. Sounds like, you know, the piggy bank was empty. But they did find these linen wrappings for the scrolls. So pretty sure with that they really were a place where scrolls were. Somebody took them. Don't know when. You know, was it many, many years ago or whether it was recently? Probably many years ago. You know, we call them not tomb robbers, but jar robbers. And so how do these things get overlooked? Well, they've looked in these passages, and then when you have people like Randall Price and students got to have jobs to do, they go looking for stuff, so they re-examine caves they've already looked at. They never found anything in them, so they go back into the recesses of the caves, and that's what they did. So that's what we have here. These are the caves we know of. If you stand up here and look into it, this is usually where the tourists stand, and look across this wadi here, and most of the caves are almost within stone's throw of where you stand. So that takes care of that. Now, last week I also talked a little bit about the Exodus, and there's so many things in the Bible that are clear, but there's many things in the Bible that are questioned, not the historicity of it, but exactly what's meant where and where those places were. An Exodus route is one of those issues. There are many elements of the historical record that in the details are controversial. The Bible said that Israel left Egypt and migrated to Canaan under the leadership of Moses and then Joshua. Well, the Bible does give details about the routing, quite detailed with names and places. After a while, they tend to be lost or misidentified. Add to this simply honest confusion and the outright denial that such an event as the Exodus, leading to the establishment of Israel as a nation, never happened. So you have a lot of headwinds with this kind of stuff. Surely the eye of faith, and that's what our eyes are, they do not need to know the details to believe the biblical account. And the eye of faith is not blind faith, though. You know, even though it says this, and there's no evidence for it, we have to believe it anyway, that's sometimes okay, but eventually you kind of figure out there's going to be some evidence for what it says. The eye of faith is not blind, but it must see the reality that exists in the biblical accounts. I mean, there has to be real places finally found to talk about that's talked about in the Bible. So the Bible must agree with the reality as it is observed. So the event and the route of the Exodus, whether known in detail or not, is accepted as truth. There was an Exodus. There is a route. The reality is simply that the true history is observed in the historical life of the Jews. The Jews are here. I mean, you can't make this whole story up and have Jews show up without a history. So the reality is that true history is observed in the historical life of the Jews, their nation and their peoplehood. Here the Egyptian time reigning pharaohs are wrong. The record is off. They call it Egyptian chronology. Everybody, until recently, has always used the Egyptian chronology because it was impeccable, but it's wrong. So conflicts with the Bible, so the Bible's got to change. No, you wait long enough, you find out the Egyptian record was wrong because they had pharaohs that were co-reigning and they took the names of another pharaoh and took the credit for what they had done. All of a sudden, you got a collapse of time. Take 500 years out of the pharaohs and you're back to where the Bible is with the dating. So whereas the Bible had it right. As there are believers, there are scoffers who contend that the whole Jewish history is made up. And we will not spend much time here, but point out that time is always on the side of truth. Truth will eventually prevail, as we have just seen how the skeptics thought about the biblical transmutation. But the biblical text has remained faithful, even though copied many times. But they're embarrassingly silent about these recent discovery of the scrolls. Never do we see an apology. Well, I'm sorry we misled all these college students that were going to the seminaries, that were going to the pulpits that taught this stuff for 50, 60, 100 years. No apologies. No, we just go on to another lie. It's the way it is. So the route of the Exodus usually is taken the red line. I wonder if this works. Usually down this way, here's Mount Sinai, here's the laws given, then climb up to Kadesh Barnea, come back down here, and they go back up. This is the entry into the promise. That's usually the way it's usually taken. So I raised a question last week about the routing of the Exodus as it relates to the location of Aaron's death on Mount Hor. A short excursion to the subject may be worthwhile. Now, I do not intend to get into the details of the of the question, but to present a plausible, we have to be plausible, solution to the Exodus that fits the geography and the history of the Bible. The geography is real, and history is real. They have to fit. So here's a route, traditional routing. They usually take it through this section through here. Sometimes it's called the Reed Sea, and that's the corruption of the Red Sea, which isn't really true. The Reed Sea is Reed, Tree Sea. And then they head on south here. This is usually where the Exodus crossing of the water is taught. The problem with that a little bit is the identification of the Red or the Reed Sea is that the Reed Sea is not a sea that's deep enough really to swallow up all this Egyptian army unless you go in the middle of this. And why would you do that when you could go around it? You know, they were trapped, remember? They were trapped. Remember that? They were trapped. Important issue. So that's how they usually take it, then down this way. The better route is probably across the desert. Now, if you read in the text, and again, don't have time to do all this for tonight, but if you do it, I've done it, take some time, read through the text. This is a plausible route. It probably makes more sense. And it says in Exodus 13:18, said, hence God led the people around by the way of the wilderness. This is the wilderness, by the way. To the Red Sea. Now, to the Red Sea. This is the Red Sea, one of the ears of the rabbit. And the sons of Israel went up in martial array from the land of Egypt. Okay. Now, the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, tell the sons of Israel to turn back, and camp before Pi-Hiriath, between Migdol and the sea, and you shall camp in front of Baal Zephon, opposite by the sea. Now, we have trouble with these addresses. For Pharaoh will say to the sons of Israel, they are wandering aimlessly in the land. Remember that? Well, what God tells Moses to do is go out here, and then it says, turn around. Turn around. When this turn around event occurs, Pharaoh must have had his spies out looking, watching every move they made. Because it got back to Pharaoh, says, those guys are lost. Look, they're wandering back into the desert. For Pharaoh will say the sons of Israel are wandering aimlessly in the land. The wilderness has shut them in. And thus I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and he will chase after them, and I will be honored through Pharaoh and all his army, God speaking, and the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord. All right, so this is a provocation that God sort of teases them with, and then Pharaoh comes chasing after them with his army. Now, we're talking here 10 days, 2 weeks before all this happens. Not the next morning the Pharaoh's army was on the tail of the Israelites, as I was usually taught. Not enough time for all of that. So we need a little more time. And this works. All right. So now, we're not done yet. I'll go back. There is a wadi through here. I'll show you the next picture. The next picture is the picture of that gorge. And through this is where the children of Israel went. And you see the far distance here, this is water. Wada. Not good. So these are going into like almost a blind canyon because they can't get out of it. And on either side, especially on the southern side, you have this wall. And on the northern side, there's a wall too. But there's also further up, there's an Egyptian fortress. So what we have here, the Israel gets onto what looks like a delta out of this wadi, and they're parked. So the Egyptian army chases them in like this, and they get parked here. Remember, we're talking about 2 million people parked here, and there's no way to go. I don't know if I have the text for you or not. It just said they had no way to go. They can't go this way. They can't go this way. They're stuck. So here's this Nuweiba Delta. And delta because this water comes through the wadi, washes out the dirt, and makes a delta like it does on a river. Lo and behold, there is an underground bridge through here. This is the Sierra African Rift. Goes down 1,500 feet. But through this point, it comes up nearly to the surface, still today. And apparently that's where the children of Israel could walk across when the water was depressed enough with the wind, dried out, all miracle here, not physical, natural physics, and they walk across. So that's where I think it occurred. Now we got the Israelites on the east side of the Red Sea. Okay, back up here. This is the delta where all the children of Israel would have sat. Now, I did a little figuring out about how many square feet you need for people to stand, and it's certainly not that many. You get 2 million people standing together. Now you got to figure the animals and the carts and stuff that they were using to haul with. You got to add that more than just human people. But there's no problem with a couple of square miles takes care of all the people that are exiting. In fact, it could be done in a square mile of people. So here we got it. That's where it is. And this is the rest of the story here. It's been promoted as that site. Now, we're going back to the Hor here, Mount. Now, when they set out from Kadesh, Kadesh is at the southern end of Israel where they sent their first spies. When they set out from Kadesh, this is a route here, by the way, the sons of Israel, the whole congregation, came to Mount Hor. Next thing, from Kadesh, next thing was Hor. When the Canaanite, the king of Arad, who lived in Negev, who visited his site last week, a little bit to the northeast, heard that Israel was coming, and apparently they were coming in his direction, which would make sense, by the way of Athraim. Then he fought against Israel and took some of the captives. So Israel made a vow to the Lord, said, if you will indeed deliver these people to my hand, then I surely will destroy the cities. Then the Lord heard the voice of Israel and delivered up the Canaanites, and they utterly destroyed them. And the cities, thus the name of the place was called Horma. And then he set out for the Mount Hor on the way to the Red Sea to go around to the land of Edom, and the people became impatient, and so on. So this is the traditional routing. All we got to do is change it a little bit and say, well, they came across the Gulf down here, and they came up this way, and they would have gone to Kadesh Barnea, wherever that is, sent out the spies, came back, bad report, sat here in this vicinity called the Wilderness of Zin, for 38 years. Now we're getting ready to move on from the wilderness of Zin. And up here is where Arad is. Should take that out. But up here is where Arad is, but right about there. So they're setting out this way. And Arad's seeing them. So they attack, defeat them, and they keep on going. Now, Edom is a little bit hard to know exactly how far you'd go, but they went around it. So either this is right. If it is, then they went clear down here. And then they headed on up. Now, why they have, most maps have them coming down here, and I don't know why. I can't figure that out. Because you go by the list here, which I give you numbers 33, 36, that's not on the list. I'm just trying to do something real quick for you here without going through all of this. But so we have them coming up to Mount Hor and then cutting across and going on up. And that, I think, is the better route. And that's why I think Hor is probably down here rather than over in Jordan, which would be down here about somewhere. Some said, you say, well, they came down here and Aaron died. But the way the order of it's in the list, the Hor should be higher up. okay, here's our ARAD, and here's where the we're settled for a couple of years, 38 years probably. Here's the king, and there here's the mountain that Aaron dies on, the one we're at least identified with. Come across this way, somewhere Edom, then on up. Okay. All right, we kill that one. Enough of that. That's the rest of that. Now, the area we're going to spend our time on tonight is in that west and south of Jerusalem. It's kind of the Old Testament territory. Jesus never went here. But we have record of the Philistines because they were over here against the shoreline over here where the Philistines were. We have Ashkelon and so forth. There's five Philistines. Ekron was another one. Timnah is another one. So those were over here. And then we have Judah in this area. Here's Jerusalem. And here's the Valley of Sorek. And here's the Valley of Elah, which we'll talk about with David and Goliath. So this is kind of Philistine border right through here. And here's Israelite. And so this is a point of friction. And so the Old Testament has a lot to say about the time of the judges and of Samuel and early days of Saul and David. These was the friction areas for Israel. And you tourists usually don't go there. So we have, this is kind of a shortcut to Jerusalem. And so when I'll talk about this in a minute, when the Philistines come, and when David and Goliath are duking it out, the Philistines are making their move to go up to Jerusalem, they would have gone out this route. So David and Goliath, that battle would have stopped the Philistines if they could have stopped them in the Elah Valley. Because if they wouldn't have stopped, they would have kept on going up the valley. So we call it just a shortcut to Jerusalem. And on one of my series, I show you the photographs that I took on that road up to Jerusalem. Okay, now we're going to talk a little bit about the southwest of Jerusalem area. And here's Beth Shemesh. That's where the Ark of the Covenant was taken. Under David, well, it made a route and eventually ended back in, I think it was David's time. And this was the route. Maybe you don't remember this, but the ark was kept at Shiloh for 305 years. It came into the land. This Ark of the Covenant was in a tent, collapsible. They moved it in the wilderness, took it down, put it in a wagon, brought it. But in the land, they lived for 305 years, it says here, in this tabernacle. It's temporary housing for God. And it was stolen by the Philistines, and this is the route they took. Now, these are Philistine countries. And, of course, this Philistine country, you know the whole story about the Philistines. They had that thing with them, and it caused them nothing but trouble. And they wanted to get rid of it, finally. And so they put it on a cart, and they sent it back. There's 50,000 got killed here. They set it on the cart back to Kiriath-Jearim. And there it sat for 92 years. Then it went to Jerusalem and finally went back to Gibeon for another 58 years before the temple was built. So I'm showing you this because this is the area where all this happens. Okay, Beth Shemesh is the place that right down here is one of the places that is now a dig. Not been there yet. Hope to go there this time. Okay, Elah Valley. It's always difficult to see things when you're there. The guide says, over there was the Philistines, over there was David, over here was the rocks, okay? Get on the bus, we're going. And what'd you just say? You know, what mountains are you pointing at? You know, there's all these mountains over here, all these mountains over here. So the only way I figured this out, I had to come home to figure it out. Now, when I'm done, I hope you'll understand it better than I did when I was there. So we're approaching the Elah Valley from the south going north, called the Elah Valley Junction. We're not in the valley yet. We're approaching it. I'm going to show you too many pictures. But this is Philistine Hill. This is Philistine Hill. So you might say all of this is Philistine Hill. The Israelites are on the other side of the valley, which we don't even see yet. So this is the same road. I'm driving closer. And see Ashdod's on the list there. That's a Philistine city. Beth Shemesh, I just mentioned about that. That's on the other side of the valley, up on the hill a little bit. And we break out into the open in the valley and look across the valley. And we look to the north side of the valley. And we see the Israeli side of Elah, the valley. And we're going to see these two pitted against each other and this flat plain between them. Okay, now, when I told you first, we were here. Now, here are two towers. You kind of keep your eye on those. When they show up again, you kind of know where they are. That's kind of like a gateway into the Elah Valley. This is the Elah Valley. When I said the Philistines were on the side, I said, this is that hill. And I drew it. It drew around clear down to here. And this over here is Israel, like this. Back up here is Beth Shemesh. And back way over this way is Jerusalem. Now, you know a lot more about this than I did when I was there. I still didn't figure it out until I got home. Now, we're at one spot here where you can actually oversee the valley. First time I was here, usually you go down the valley, pick some stones, get on the bus, and leave. But this guy said, let's go and look, let's go up on the mountain and not go down here and look the valley. Let's go on the mountain, look into the valley. And I always like elevation. If you can get up and look down on something, you understand it a lot quicker, like you do in armies. You know, you can get the elevation on your enemy, you got a chance. So we had the Philistine side. Here's my arrow, and the Philistine city is over here. That is important. Now, that's just a close-up. The same thing. Here's the Philistine side. Here's the Israeli side. And somewhere along here, David and Goliath met. Probably not over here. Probably over here. On the eyesight of both sides. Now, there's my towers I talked to you about, right? Keep your eyes on those towers. Okay, now, I've swung over to, here's the Elah Valley. Now, I'm going to swing over this way, okay? I'm going to swing over this way. I'm doing that right for you. So Elah Valley is over here. I'm going to swing over this way. And I look on the top there, see the Jerusalem vicinity. I'm not sure that's Jerusalem itself. It may be. We're not that far away from it. But at least that's the direction. It's Jerusalem. And then you see the mountain ridge, which I'm going to show you more than once, is the ridge that runs down north and south from Jerusalem to Hebron along that ridge. That's the mountain ridge. And that's what you see on the horizon. So all of this in here is nothing. I mean, in terms of what we're concerned about, because this is just the way the land looks. And by the way, you see how much agriculture there is in these valleys. Okay, now we're back to the original look. Here are the two towers. All right, here's the Elah Valley, and this is a little bit further to the west this time, not to show anything except all this is Philistine territory. All this is Philistine territory. Israeli territory is this little point of it over here. Okay, this is the swing over to the left again. Elah Valley is way over here. Okay, now here's a satellite picture that shows you what I should have showed you to begin with. It'd be a lot easier. So we drove in this road right here. This is how we got in. The two towers I showed you are about here. And we drove in here, and then we got up here and looked down in the valley. Remember I said get up high? That's where we were, up here. This is actually Philistine territory where we were. And we looked down the valley. So here are the Philistines, the yellow. And then here are the Israelis in the green. And here's Beth Shemesh up here. And this is S-I-H-O-H. This is a Philistine town right here. Okay, without the marks. Now, the battle happened. I should have read text for you here, but I'd tell you the story, I guess. The battle happened about 1010 B.C. after the Philistines attempted to push along the Valley of Elah towards the heart of the kingdom of Judah, which is Jerusalem. Now, they're going to go this way, and they have to be stopped. All right, so King Saul and his army, Israelite army, blocked them, facing the Philistines at Succoth in the center of the valley. Where exactly? Well, there they are. Look at that. David and Goliath. There they are. Still got the footprints in the sand. The Philistine giant Goliath in nearby city of Gath has challenged the Israelites to fight him in order to determine the fate of the battle. Save a lot of lives that way. But no Israelite soldier dared to take the challenge. Only the young David was untrained military shepherd boy, who came to assist his elder brothers. Remember, they brought him food. Bravely volunteered for the fight. The two camps watched the fight on both sides of the valley. See the map on the right. Now, David's got to have ammunition, so this is where he gets it from. And I think that most of the good rocks are gone because the tourists have been here. But this is the bed of the Elah River, the Wadi. Okay, so somewhere along here, David would have picked up his five smooth stones. And we brought home some spice, but they're not very nice. I think, like I said, the tourists got them. Another picture. This is, by the way, this is the Philistine side over here and the Israeli side over here. So we're walking up, picking up stones. You recognize yourself, Raleigh? All right, so we're all looking for rocks. Now we're back to the Israeli side. This is the dry riverbed, rocks. I'm boring you with this. We're coming the same way, coming back out. And now we have kind of a different picture. The Philistine side, Israeli side, somewhere out here is where the fight occurs. Elah Valley floor. Okay, I guess we've done this already. I think this familiar to you now. See, here's Elah Valley. Here's the towers. I'm doing this repeat just to say that, I know about that stuff already. So another one a little closer. Elah Valley, the towers, the Elah Junction, going off this way to Highway 1 towards Jerusalem. Okay. All right. So there can't be any questions about that. Okay, we keep on going north. Always got to think of my directions. North, north, towards Galilee. And we come to an intersection of Highway 1. Highway 1 is the main road from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. It actually goes from Jerusalem up to Amman. I mean, that's the road's connected. I don't think they call it number one in Jordan, but it's number one up till the border. Now, I want you to notice here, I only have one picture to show you otherwise, the overgrown vegetation that's been planted in Israel. This is new since 1948. Now, that's a long time. You can grow a big tree in 50 years, 60 years, 70 years. Some die and regrow again. And a lot of them are deciduous, have leaves, right? So the conifers are the green ones that are during the year time, right? So a lot of them are conifers. You know, most of them don't have leaves. They're just evergreens. And therefore, they're green all year round. It's pretty. All right. So here we go. That one says to the left, it's going to Tel Aviv, so we're going north. To the right, it's going to go to Jerusalem. And there's probably better pictures in the world than I've got, but I have to take them from the bus because they're not going to stop for me. So we have these pictures. Now remember, all this vegetation is new. I mean, new from the time of Israel came to the land. And it's beautiful. I mean, it's just like wherever you want to go in Israel, it's a different sight. Whether you're in the desert or whether you're here, whether you're on the mountain or by the sea, it's a place of rocks, of waterfalls, of rivers, of streams, of springs. It's just a gorgeous place in spite of its under judgment. So we're keeping on going up to Jerusalem. Jerusalem is to the right. Here we can't see it. Some more just wonders, just show you just generally how it looks. Lots of trees, four-lane road. They drive like in America. You could drive these roads in no trouble. You can write all the signs are in English. Then we come to this Highway 1 is also called the Burma Road, or it's close to the Burma Road. Now, Burma Road, we think of China, the Far East. But the Burma Road got this name because it was a road that was built to connect El Tel Aviv, or the coast, supplies with Jerusalem, 1948. Remember, they declared independence in May of 1948. Immediately, the Arabs tried to choke off the Jews in Israel and Jerusalem. So I'm not going to explain to you all this, but this is the map of the war and the roads and so forth. And what they did, they cut them off, and there was no way for them to get their supplies to Jerusalem. Their people were living there, and no one was feeding them. They were trying to starve them out of anything. Now, I just noticed this is my one picture. Look at the barren landscape. 1948. There aren't trees. You know, the Turks didn't take anything. They didn't put anything in the land. They just took. So they stripped off all the trees and never planted any. So we had this barren landscape, and we have a convoy here. And I don't know if this is after the road was built or this is the way the convoy went into Tel Aviv to bring supplies, which was always under attack. Let me read. The road from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem was cut off by the Arab fire, direct fire and bombs. In order to preserve connection and supplies so as not to surrender Jerusalem, in other words, if the people in Jerusalem were choked and they gave up the land, they would have lost the battle. I mean, like you do in war. So supplies were essential to keep the Jews alive in Jerusalem and to maintain possession of it. It was given to them in the 1948 UN division of the land, which was recognized by the countries, which made it legal. The Jews cut a new road out of the sight of the Arabs firing. Now, they couldn't see where the road was. But it was a three-mile section. It was almost impossible due to its steep grades. And if you watch the movie, it's called, help me, Cast a Giant Shadow, something like that. It is the story with Frank Sinatra and other main guys in it that talk about building this road. And it's supposed to be a romance, but I don't care for that part. I like the road building. And something gets shot in it, which I think it really did happen. One of the good guys got shot by a friendly fire. Anyway, so we have this being built. So they built it out of sight, but in a manner that 3 miles was impossible due to steep grades. Right. But in a manner of three weeks probably, because June 16 or something like that was done, 25 hours a day work, operations of the roads completed under air blind bombing. They didn't know the roads was, so they just lob bombs over the hill, you know, so hope it's going to hit something. And sniper fire, you know, that's always dangerous. They sneak up and they shoot people, you know, hiding around. All right. So an impossible job was done in June 1948. That's the story. So along the road, Highway 1, you'll pass these things. And it used to be when we came to Israel, they always point these out to us. Now I guess it's so old, they don't even point it out to us. But these are the memorials of these trucks that were bombed and left sitting there, whether they were actual bomb trucks or they've made art renditions of them or not, I don't know. But that's what these represent. The memorials, what? Oh, yeah, look at the vegetation. Yeah, and the eucalyptus trees. Okay, we keep going uphill, and we come to our McDonald's for a stop for a breakfast. No, we didn't do that. And we come to a place called Abu Ghosh, and Abu Ghosh probably is actually on the other side of the road, so it's just to get off the road here and you go across. Abu Ghosh is the Emmaus disciples' place. Jesus was on the Emmaus Road. Remember when they met after the resurrection? He talked to them, and he said, didn't our hearts burn when he talked to us about, you know, the history and so forth? And they found later that that's with Jesus. So that's the area we're in. We're not that far, maybe 10 miles out of Jerusalem, maybe not even that far. So the Emmaus is to our left here. Again, beautiful roads. Here's six lanes. Jerusalem on the hillside, tops. In fact, that little guy there is a bridge. Now, I love bridges, but sometimes they seem like they made it really difficult to build a bridge. This is I'll show it to you next. It's just a spike in the sky that's got a bend in it, holds up this bridge for their rapid transit light rail system. So this is what we call modern Jerusalem. And then next to it over here, I think, is the hotel where we stay. So I know we're in Jerusalem here. We're looking at it. There it is. There's the bridge. I have it somewhere else. I'll probably give you this picture. And we have the hotel again. I probably should point out the wrong one because I pointed out this one. We come across, we stopped in the kind of west side of Jerusalem to deliver something. And in the meantime, we pass this place. This is where all the immigrants come. And this is where they learn the Hebrew language. You have to learn Hebrew. I mean, if you're going to function, you better learn Hebrew because that's what they talk. You know, it used to be a lot of dead language. Now it's very alive. I just saw a picture of these people waiting for a bus. They're normal people. They have jobs. They go to work. Military mixes in with the rest. And of course, these are the places where people like to bomb. So that kind of thing is just kind of less. It about hasn't happened anymore since they built the wall. There's your bridge. Now think about the forces at this joint right here. Why do you have to do that? Well, they said they had a little difficulty getting it built because they built it and then it sagged, right? Get the slack out of it. And then they rebuilt it and now it's stable. So where else but Israel? Now, this is the Valley Mevreshet. I think how to say it, Mevreshet. Anyway, I see the word so fast that I don't know, it's not an English word, so I don't know what it is, but it's a huge valley west of Jerusalem, and it's on the way to the airport. And they're building this tremendous road system and a light rail system from Jerusalem to Tel Aviv that you make that trip in 20 minutes. Yeah. So we have a roadway here. I'll show you a lot of pictures here. Just run through these real quick. A roadway here. Okay, see it? And it's crossing this Mevreshet Valley. These are pylons that are building for probably the light rail. There's two things. I don't always know which is which. It will die into the mountainside somewhere in a tunnel. And here again, we have these pylons being built. Tremendously expensive. We're talking billions of dollars here. And this is a little country. And here's a railroad, and it's diving into a tunnel. So this whole thing has been bored through here. Now, this was 2014. And this is building. This is called, I don't know what to call it, traveling crane, I call it, because it moves. The train, the blue thing moves. It builds out, can cantilever over to the next pylon that's going to build, and can walk back. I mean, tremendous innovation, I think. Maybe they build them otherwhere else, but where else but Israel do you see this stuff?
Texas.
Have you seen one like this in Texas? Have you seen one like this in Texas? Something like that, yeah. Okay, well, then these are precast units here. You can see these joints. I was the one kind of crazy glue they used to hold these things together, but they do it with tension rods, I'm sure. But anyway, it's just a marvel. I just love that kind of stuff, obviously, kind of my background. So this is crossing Mefreshet Valley. It is going to be the tallest bridge in Israel, which is not a big statement, but it's quite high. Again, this is the rapid transit. You see where it dives into the bank rather than go over the top and drill through it. We're just following along now the way to the Tel Aviv airport.
You know they got to have a lot of guards on that.
Well, they did not build it. They did not build it in East Jerusalem or the West Bank. They built it in their side. I think that they are concerned about somebody going to blow the thing up. That's true. Okay, now these are pictures. Go back to the Elah Valley now. Kind of disordered here, but we're going to back to the Elah Valley. I just going to bring you some pictures coming into Jerusalem from a different angle. Then I got one more for you. So this is going to the northeast, up towards Jerusalem. And they all kind of look alike, you know, all this trees and stuff. And this was the place where our guide lived. Up in here, he said, I don't know where, somewhere. I said, that's where he lives. And I don't want to call these settlements because these are not in the West Bank. These are just developments. Oh, by the way, did you hear that today with our president and Netanyahu meeting? And, you know, we hear the story on the TV, but we don't know what the real story is. But apparently that they're going to, president said to Netanyahu, you don't expand your settlements. Well, that was all right with Netanyahu because they got a lot of space inside the settlements where they can still build. All right, so one of those sleight of hand things. So we're heading towards a tunnel here that gets us into Jerusalem where our hotel is. And by the way, this trip, we watched a movie this last week called Double Edge. It's not a terribly well-done movie. In fact, it uses people in Israel and the Palestinian people that kind of represent both of their sides to each other. Well, I'm going to tell you about that. Oh, yeah, the hotel that the lady stayed in, the reporter stayed in, was the hotel we stayed in on this trip. So I just noticed today there was an upgrade hotel because our hotel was full. They sent us to this hotel that was $300 a night. So I think I'd like to go back there. All right. In fact, it's the lobby of the hotel. Okay, now we're right on track. Up to Jerusalem. I think one of the most impressive things of all the things that I've seen in Israel is on this ride that we took from Jericho up to Jerusalem with our guide in 2008, Yossi, Jewish guy. And what he said on that trip, I transcribed. I should have had him say it to you rather than me say it because I'm not him. But I wanted you to hear what he said, so that's why I transcribed. Maybe someday I'll take out and make it a transcript, let him just say it in his own words. But here's a Jew, as he'll say, I was born in Jerusalem. And you get an idea what the heart of a Jew is when it comes to his land and comes to his city. It is something I cannot explain. There's nothing I can make a comparison to. And it just seems to me like it is so biblical. It is so biblical. God has given into the Jew the heart of his land, that he cannot erase it. And I was going to bring that passage out of Jeremiah. I sit by the waters of Babylon and I yearn for Jerusalem, that idea. Well, Yossi lives in Jerusalem, yearns for Jerusalem. He's gone 3 days. He got to get back to Jerusalem. I don't understand that. I like Lincoln, but I never felt that way about Lincoln. When I come back to Lincoln, I said, I got to go to work. All right, so here we go. This is his words now, somewhat edited since he doesn't speak very good English. From this moment, he says, we're going up to Jerusalem. This is the road that goes from Jerusalem to Amman, which he said someday will connect. And he's thinking millennium. He's right. Leaving Jericho on the right. Now, we've covered about, the whole trip takes 22 minutes. So we were going to cover about 15, 16 minutes off and jump in down the road. We're not going to do the whole trip. The first time when we reach the top of the hill, so we're getting close to Jerusalem, straight ahead, you're going to see towers of Jerusalem. Remember, he's saying this. And I'm looking, where are the towers of Jerusalem? Well, I think that these are the towers of Jerusalem. Maybe there are three. And the one to the left would be the one that we're looking up over here on Scopus, the one to the left. Fuzzy picture, sorry. But there they are again. Ladies and gentlemen, I was born in Jerusalem many years ago. I want to welcome each one of you to visit my city. Rafi, our driver, is also a Jerusalemite. I know that for all of you, it is the dream of your life to visit Jerusalem in your lifetime. I am so glad and so proud, more than glad and proud, so much that I can't find the right words to tell you how much I appreciate that you came to fulfill your dream, that you came to see the city at this time. You will be blessed. You will be a different people because you visited this city. This is a dream for every human being, Jew, Christian, Muslim, every human being on this globe. If you go to the smallest, tiniest place in the world, they may not have heard about Israel, but they will have heard about Jerusalem. So welcome from the bottom of my heart to visit my city. Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jerusalem. So I was born in this city, and every time I am away from this city a few days, when I come back home, it is a pilgrimage for me. It is like coming. I mean that when I am away, I feel that something is missing, not just my home, not just my bed, the dinner, the table, or the kitchen. It's the city. The spirit of the city is missing. And when we see the Jewish families together at Passover, when we read and tell about the Exodus, we drink wine and eat and we sing songs together. The last sentence we say to all of us is, Lashana Habana, which means next year in Jerusalem. Even if I live in the city, even those who were born and die in the city, every year we say next year in Jerusalem because, get this, because I have not reached Jerusalem yet spiritually. And every time it is going up higher and higher to reach Jerusalem. So he's making this a physical experience to make it a spiritual experience. See, we could help him a little bit here, couldn't we? So ladies and gentlemen, welcome, 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 welcome to this magnificent city. And we all said, thank you.
One night while I was sleeping, I had a dream so fair. I stood in old Jerusalem beside the temple there. I heard the children sing and ever as they sang, I thought the voice of angels from heaven in answer rang. I thought I'm I thought my dream was changed. The streets no longer rang as with the glad hosannas that the little children sang. The sun grew dark with mystery, and the morn was cold and chilled as the shadow of a cross arose upon a lonely hill. As the shadow was on its streets, and the gates, they were open wide, that all might enter, and no one was denied. No need of moon or the stars by night, or the sun to shine by day, for it was the new Jerusalem that would not pass away.
The New Jerusalem, we don't see the New Jerusalem. It's not like they just repainted it. That's the new going to be a New Jerusalem where righteousness will dwell. And the New Jerusalem, I think, comes out of the heavens where the saints of the resurrected saints dwell, join the earth here. And we rule and reign with Christ for the 1,000 years and on, whoever knows.
Do they understand what they're saying?
I have a clip of Yosi giving us the gospel. I'll play that for you guys later. And I thought I didn't have it. I do have it. I had all these things on high definition discs, and I didn't. I just got through translating it so I can get to it on my computer. And I listened to it again. Said, "Man, that guy. He took the sacrifice of Isaac and Abraham's sacrifice of Isaac, and he made point by point comparison with Christ. And he's the guy that said, one of our guys challenged him on the first day, you know, which is funny. Well, if Jesus is the Messiah and he's coming back again, as you say, when I see him, I'll believe in him. He says, wow, you've been reading his Bible. So it's a strange thing. And he is so in love with Jerusalem. And it is something that he was put on. It wasn't, I mean, you could, all of us talked about it later, said, isn't that something? I wish I could give his pathos and how he said this stuff. It isn't something that anybody else says that way about anything. So, all right, we got done exactly on time. That was the idea. So next week we will, I don't know where we're going to start with Jerusalem. I kind of like to start back with the history of Jerusalem, you know, where it started. You know, go back to Melchizedek and move us forward through the layers. Because we have 12 weeks left here, and I don't think I need 12 weeks to explain to you what's in Jerusalem today. So I might do that. I may not. Let's kind of take a look at it and see. So thanks for coming, and I hope that you had a little taste of Jerusalem as we approach tonight. Let's pray. Thank you, Lord, for the evening, Lord, again, for the joy we have knowing about the future. Lord, we look at these pile of rocks and the people that live there and the buildings that have been built there, and we know somehow, someday, this will be some fantastic, unimaginable place that you will restore and make brand new and be the place of your throne and your rule over the world. Thank you, Lord, for these truths that we have on the Bible. Lord, may we be patient as we wait. May we be excited as we wait, knowing, Lord, even our Jewish friends that have not received the Messiah, that they may, in your goodwill, be found to be believers in the tribulation and become those that become evangelists. What would be a wonderful thing if they're not part of the church. So, Lord, we pray for our friends in Israel that are unsaved, for all those that are there under stress, and those that are there in secular humanism that are totally unhooked from anything in the Bible. But, Lord, they are your people, and someday you will call them to yourself. We realize that will happen. Thank you, Lord, for a glimpse into that city today and for the joy that's there already as we anticipate someday all the promise that you made to Abraham and all his descendants, even to us, will become a reality. Bless us now as we go to our home. Keep us safe as we go. Bring us back in next week. And for all this, we give you praise. In Jesus' name, pray it. Amen.